Again, next week I start teaching again the series on the parables, but one of the things that we wanted to do this holiday week was really want to invite, and many of you don't need any introduction, he leads you in worship every week, our senior worship pastor. Joel tells people oftentimes that for a number of years here, he was the youngest guy on staff, and now he's the old guy on staff. He served with us, this Labor Day will be 15 years, and so Nan and I consider it a joy to serve with he and Stacy, and we've seen God do a lot here through the years. And we wanted to use this holiday weekend just to remind the home crowd, if you will, the heart of worship, the why we do what we do, what it means to be a church that worships. And across all of our campuses, Joel got to share this message as well. And so I wanted him to hear. It'll feel and look a little bit different this morning because we kind of planned it that way, because we wanted to remind ourselves and in many ways bring us back to the heart of worship, because that is a culture of Bethlehem Church and it fuels us not only in our past but our future. Will you guys give a warm welcome to my main man, Big Joel Goddard.
Well, I know I say this, but I really mean it. I love y'all, and I love this church. I love getting to be a part of God moving. You know, I've done this, this is the third time doing it, but I just, every time, I'm just blown away thinking about the things that God has done at Bethlehem Church. Thankful for Pastor Jason, to get to be a part of this kind of move of God, revival, and seeing the life changes happen here. And it's an honor. Many times when we sing songs, you know, my favorite part of Sunday is not up here. It's getting to come out and say hey to everybody before the services and after the services, being able to pray with people and find out what's going on in each other's lives, because it helps me connect when we're doing certain songs and a certain line comes up and I think of people in the room and go, I'm with that person. I've got friends I was born and raised with here, and there are times where, you know, I just feel connected to my brothers that I grew up with and friends, and then also just watching people come in for the first time. It's one of my favorite things, is to watch people not even knowing what to expect and coming in and seeing what God does in them and experience the presence of the Lord. And you guys are just incredible. Today, we're going to have a State of the Union when it comes to worship at Bethlehem Church. I'm going to talk to you about where we've come from, where we are, and where I believe God has taken us. And I'm just going to talk for just a few minutes here, and then we're going to spend time worshiping. You don't even have to hear Jason preach today. So that's probably not a good thing for especially for me. But I think when I think about worship, when I think about Bethlehem and where we've come from, I always kind of go back a little bit further than that. You know, being here 15 years, I was on the road for 15 years before that. And this is my son, Elijah, playing keys. And yeah. Side note, I told all of our worship leaders that I will not be the one to say he's good enough to play with us, because he's my kid, and they would just do that because of that. And he worked. The boy worked hard, and all the worship leaders here unanimously said he's ready. And so he's been able to play with us here. He plays a lot in South Venue and the other campuses. And I'm sure any of you have kids, it's just what a joy for me. And then this is my wife, Stacy, and for us to be able to do this together, it's just incredible. But when that big joker was born 16 years ago, we were at the hospital, and the former pastor before Jason, Jody Heiss, he came to visit us at the hospital, and he said, would you consider coming and being the worship pastor at Bethlehem? And I always had a canned answer that I would give people that would ask me if I would consider getting off the road and being the worship pastor at a church, and I didn't give that answer to him. And so when he walked out of the room, Stacy looked at me and goes, we're going to Bethlehem, aren't we? And I was like, I don't know, but it just hits me different, and we need to ask the Lord. We need to seek the Lord about this. So we began to pray and ask a lot of questions. And then I went to Pastor Jody and I said, listen, before I say yes, I want to meet with the people that, some of y'all don't know this story, but Bethlehem was First Baptist Bethlehem across 316. And it got hit by lightning and burned to the ground. And about 80 people there, instead of just rebuilding what they had there, had a vision to reach this area and built a place way bigger than the amount of people that went to the church at that time. And that's who you would consider to be our senior adults. And I asked Jody, I said, I want to meet with them before I say yes, because if they're not with me, I'm not coming. And so they set up a meeting, and we met in this room called the Hangar back then. And there was about 70, I guess, senior adults. We all go in one room together, and they put me on the hot seat. You know, they are waiting to ask me questions. And they were asking me questions that you would expect. They were asking about, are we still going to do hymns? Are we going to do Southern Gospel? Are you going to do those songs where you say the same thing over and over and over again? I get it the first time. And, you know, all of those things. And I sweat out a few of those. Like, they had me on my heels. I didn't have a lot of answers. But at one point in this meeting, I said, look, I'm probably, if I take this job, I'm going to do things that y'all don't like. I said, but I want to reach your grandkids. And the room shifted. I said, so I know that there are going to be songs I do you don't like, volume and all of those things, but I want to reach your grandkids. And the meeting ended with all of them standing around me and Stacy, laid hands on us, prayed for us, and they said, we're with you. And so I would say, out of all of the incredible things I've seen here at Bethlehem, top 10 moments was that moment right there, knowing that they had my back. Now, there's been many times. I had one situation where one of them came up to me and said, son, I didn't like one song you did today. And then he kind of leaned in and goes, but you keep on doing it because look at what God is doing. And I want to be him when I grow up. Because one day these guys are taking over. This next generation is coming, and I want to be open-handed, because you got to put yourself in their shoes, in their position of the way church was at that time and how much it's changed here. And they're still here. And they're still, like, really encouraging and always telling me I don't do enough hymns at the same time. They're always telling me it was too loud. But there's just there's a sense of family. And we're all on the same page, and we're seeing God change people's lives, and so we kind of overlook those things. One thing I have learned, style's going to change. Songs are going to change. Volume is going to change. Number of people on the stage is going to change. But one thing that never changes is God. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. I've seen that, and I know that. Had an opportunity a few weeks ago. She was in the last service, and I didn't ask permission to do this because I thought she might tell me no, so I figured I'd just ask forgiveness later. But I went to go visit a few of those people. This couple, they don't live far from 316 campus, and they just celebrated their 69th year of marriage. He was born on Christmas. She was born on Halloween. So he always says that he's Jesus and she's the devil. And I love them. Love them with all my heart. Some of my favorite people here at Bethlehem. Went to go see them. And she, Miss Joy, actually used to be the piano player at First Baptist Bethlehem when it was across the street. And so she sat down at her piano, got out her hymn book, and we just started going through the hymns and singing songs. And it was a really sweet time. Y'all want to? I videoed some of it. Piano's out of tune. Doesn't matter. Y'all want to hear it? Y'all want to see it? All right. So if you guys will play that now. This is Miss Joy at her house in her living room.
Walk with the Lord in the light of His word. What a glory He sheds on our way. While we do His good will, He abides with us.
got it. Putting you on this Sunday.
It was such a sweet time. I don't know if you heard me. I said, you still got it. I said, I'm going to put you on this Sunday. She goes, no, you're not. But I think about that. I grew up in the church singing those hymns. And I remember sitting on the front row at our church. And one of the best things ever happened to me, my voice changed. And so me and my friend Sam Spears sat on the front row, and we would sing our guts out. And I could sing harmony then, so because my voice had dropped. I sang alto. He sang soprano, and that's some of my first experiences in singing songs and hymns. And, you know, we did the same ones over and over and over again. I knew the page numbers. I loved to do services where it was just singing. And I would call out page numbers, and Sam would, and we would sing these songs. And I just, those are a big part of my life. You know, same thing as here. It hadn't changed, but all churches have what they call unmentioned assigned seating. Everybody in this room pretty much sits in the same place every time. I saw a couple the last service. I said, I didn't see y'all last week. They're like, how'd you know? There's like 1,000 people in the room. And I was like, you weren't in y'all seats. Everybody always sits in the same place. We have the unmentioned assigned seating. And where we sat, the Goddard family, two rows up to the right was a family, and the mom of the family, her name was Martha. And I remember sometimes we'd be singing these hymns, and Miss Martha would just have both hands in the air. Sometimes I'd even see her. I have a vivid memory of seeing her crying one time while we were singing. And I remember we were singing Because He Lives. And we're singing that song and tear, and she got both hands in the air. And I was like 7 years old, and I remember thinking to myself, what does she want where she has both hands in the air? Because, you know, I'm 7 years old. You raise your hand, you have a question. She had both hands in the air. And so I asked my mom and dad on the way home from church, why does she put her hands in the air? They were trying to explain to me about worship, but I couldn't get it. And so I came to the only conclusion I could think of, which was, she's crazy. And I literally thought that she was crazy until I got to my sophomore year in college. That length of time, y'all. And I'm sitting in my dorm room, I'm reading through the book of Psalms, and it says in Psalm 63, I will lift up holy hands in the sanctuary. And I read that verse, and I shut my Bible, and I went, Martha's not crazy. And then the very next thing that happened has just eaten me alive ever since. The next thing I did was I opened the Bible back up and I said, what else? What else do I not know? And this is not a cut on where you came from or traditions or any of that stuff. Please don't hear that. But something lit up inside of me of, wait, there's more? There's more to God. There's more to worship. There's more. I want to know His voice. I want to know Him. I want to obey Him. I want to do everything He wants me to do. And that set me on a new trajectory. I had a paradigm shift at that moment when it came to worship. Around the same time, I had a friend invite me to go to church with him. And I'd only been in traditional Southern Baptist church, piano and an organ, and a choir with robes. And we walk in, and they were rehearsing, and y'all, they had drums. And I remember thinking to myself, these people are splitting hell wide open. My name is Joel, and I'm a recovering Pharisee. And they had electric guitars. My name is Joel, and I'm a recovering Pharisee. I sat there and went, like, this can't be God. This can't be. This style is so different than the style I grew up in, so it can't be God. But something kept drawing me in. The words, the music, the presence of the Lord, and this room was full of Marthas. It wasn't just Martha. Like, the room was full of people. I will lift up holy hands in the sanctuary. Things even more began to shift in me, and then I was traveling and going to different churches and doing revivals and youth camps and whatever anybody wanted me to do, I would do. And then Pastor Jody asked me to come to Bethlehem. So when we came, When I first came, I used to tuck my shirt in. I had like slacks and dress shoes and a dress shirt and wore a tie. At least once a month, I wore a tie. When I first came and I didn't wear a tie, this happened to Jason. When he first came, like he only been here like a month, and somebody put a box of ties on his desk. Oh, I love church. And so we started this thing together as a church about worship. The church started exploding. It's growing like crazy. And it got to the point where we could not fit everybody in one room and multiple services. So we turned in what is the entryway out here. That used to be another venue. And because of that, we hired a worship leader. And so we have me and another guy. His name's Jeremy Curtis. Some of y'all know him as the campus pastor at the Oconee campus. He's one of my favorite people on the planet. And Jeremy, when we hired him as a worship pastor first, and now he's a campus pastor. What that did was opened up some freedom for me to actually go and sit in services sometimes. And so we're sitting in a service, and I'm watching, and I looked around, and we're doing these songs, and I realized that nobody was singing. And it wasn't that people didn't like it or enjoy what we were doing, but nobody knew the songs. And so I left going, man, something's not right. And around that same time, I'm watching a video of a man, a worship leader, who wrote a very well-known worship song. And somebody had sent him video of Christians being martyred singing the song that he had written. And things began to click with me. For the longest time, you know, when you have the kind of talent that we do, you want to pick a new song every week and do a bunch of new stuff and the stuff that we enjoy. Every time I'd hear a new song, I'd put it on and we would do it. We kept doing. It was practically new songs every week. And what I realized is that we had not given people the opportunity to know songs well enough for when they need it during the week, they'd be going, I don't even remember how that second verse goes, but I really like it. And then I started thinking about growing up in church and even knowing the page number of the songs that I grew up singing and how I had not given people the opportunity to do the same thing. So I went to Jason and I said, hey, listen, I want to change some things. And he allowed me to speak to the church and I repented. And I said, we're not going to do this anymore. We went from singing 40 songs a year to 15. Some of y'all leave here on Sundays going, how many weeks are we going to do that song? A lot more. And I don't want to hear it because we have to do it 3 services and rehearse it every week. So I know you're tired of it. You should be us. But what I learned is what I want to do is to be able to give people tools outside of Sunday when you're going through something really difficult on Tuesday and you need some truth to speak and to sing or whatever. I want you to know these. And that's why we started doing that. The number one question I get when worship pastors come and visit Bethlehem is, how do you get your people to sing like that? And I always tell them, we do 15 songs a year. And they go, well, my church wouldn't let us do that. We couldn't get away with that. See, sometimes we have a wrong view of what a worship pastor is. A worship pastor is paid to learn a bunch of music and get everybody to listen to it. That's not our job. Our job is to equip you to understand and engage in the presence of the Lord with or without us. So that began a new journey in Bethlehem. That's who we were. I believe that's who we are. But now I want to talk to you about where we're going. I've seen over and over and over again, I cannot tell you how many times I've seen a miracle happen at this church. We even had one of our senior adults. She had throat cancer. Didn't even cross her mind to ask for prayer because she's like, I'm in my 80s. This is how I'm going. And we talked her into letting some people lay hands on her and pray for her, and she was healed, completely healed. I could tell you stories all day long of things that I've seen God do. But I want to talk to you about where I think we need to be heading. People ask me all the time, what's your definition of worship? And I don't like being cornered into coming up with a definition for worship, because worship is not contained in what we do on Sundays. It's not contained in music. It's something else. And every time I'd come up with it, it sounded too generic. It seemed like a platitude just to be able to fit all that in there. And so I quit even trying to have a definition for worship until not too long ago, I finally came up with what I believe is a really good definition of worship. Y'all ready? Worship is looking for God in everything. Worship is looking for God in everything. And I believe one of the shifts that we need to make is that I do not want to stand before the Lord as Bethlehem Church and us being known as a church that sang loud. Anybody can do that. Even if you can't sing well, everybody can sing. I want to be known as a church that God moves there and God does things there that we cannot do on our own. And I believe some of that happens when we change our expectation. If coming here, singing some songs, listening to a sermon, and going home is the end all for coming, I think we missed it. There are people that come in here every week who have so many hurts, so many pains, so many issues going on in their lives, things that they could have controlled, things they have no control of at all. And what I see over and over and over again is we give an opportunity for people to come forward to be prayed for, and I watch them walk out of the room because of something else to do. And I want to change our expectation. I want to change our expectation that the Bible says that if he be lifted up, he will draw all men unto him. So I don't want to be just a singing church. I want to be a church that when we step into worship and we begin to declare the truths of God, chains fall off the people around us. And then we get to see the greatest miracle you and I will ever see. And that is when someone is dead in their sin, comes to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. That is the greatest miracle you will ever see. Someone dead in their sin, realizing they need a relationship with Jesus, that he paid a price that they could not pay. That, to me, is the greatest thing we get to watch. Over and over and over again, we see that here. And so that is my challenge to you today. We're going to spend some time worshiping. In just a moment, I'm going to have you stand, and I know it may feel a little bit longer than usual, and the service is out of order than we're used to. We're creatures of habit, unmentioned assigned seating, all of that. And I will have you sit down in just a moment. But we're going to spend some time declaring the truths of God. We're going to spend some time lifting up the name Jesus. There's somebody in this room, and it's always, especially this service, who got up, or decided last night, let's try God. Let's just give God we can't fix this. Let's try God. There's a church down the road. Remember we watched that thing online, watched that service. Let's just go try them. They're in this room right now. The church is full of people like that, giving God one last shot. What do I do now? And I believe that is the, and I love, Jason really does this, by the way. He'll be backstage, and I have seen him pray. Lord, you've already been doing a work in their lives way before Sunday, and we're just going to get involved in what you're doing. I see him do it. God's already been doing a work in your heart way before you came to this service, but now you're here. And are we really just going to sing songs? Are we just going to be loud? Or are we going to press in? Or are we going to look for God in everything? At the grocery store, at work, at school, in this room, people you're in line with. When your car breaks down and you're so frustrated, but that person who comes to help you, could that be God? Looking for God in everything, especially when it's inconveniencing to us. That this could be God. Maybe this is a God moment. This is a God opportunity. We're going to declare these truths together. I want to ask you to stand now. Let's sing it.